each tournament I keep coming back to, I keep feeling a little bit better because I'm starting to play some golf again. My feels are much better than they were at the beginning of the year, and I feel like I have a better understanding of my game and my body and my swing much more so than I did at Augusta.
Tiger Woods talking about the British Open Championship at Carnoustie. It gets underway today. It seems like these golf majors kind of sneak up on you, at least for me.
They do.
It's like all of a sudden, boom, here we go, first round. Seems like they just had a major. But the favorites include Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth. According to CBS Sports, they like this Tommy Fleetwood guy. I didn't know. He's the lead singer of Fleetwood Mac? background. Henrik Stenson they liked as a possible winner. And they got Tiger Woods listed as their fifth best chance to win, which I'm not going to buy that. Sergio, they've got as sixth. But it is a different tournament, the British Open. The greens are different. The layout's different. It's a unique situation. Kind of like tennis, the French Open is very different with the clay. And, of course, Wimbledon's different with the grass. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the British Open that is getting underway today. The golfers have already started. Okay. Are the Spurs better now? Are the San Antonio Spurs better now without Kawhi Leonard? We talked about this a little bit, and if you missed it, Kawhi Leonard was traded to the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors get Danny Green as well. The Spurs get a protected first-round pick in 2019, and they get DeMar DeRozan, an all-star who's still in his prime, at the age of 29. So let's hear from Greg Popovich. Popovich talking about Kawhi Leonard in general.
Kawhi conducted himself wonderfully while he was here. You know, he helped us win a fifth championship. As I said, he was a hard worker all the time, and we wish him well. But at this point, you know, it's time to move on.
It's time to move on, and Popovich was asked. There are reports about Kawhi Leonard being a bad teammate. Pop addressed it.
That's all ridiculous. Kawhi was a great teammate all the way through. He did his work. He was no problem for anybody. Talking heads out there have to have stories, and I get it. If I was a talking head, well, maybe I am. I'd have stories too, but you know, all those stories that denigrated him in that regard, that was unfortunate and inaccurate.
Popovich says this was the way we had to go.
We talked often over the summer about a lot of different things, both on and off the court. You know, attempts were made, you know, to see what would be best. And in the end, this trade appeared. We felt that this was the way to go.
And Pop says he thinks it could work for everyone, or hopes it works out for everyone, this trade.
The trade has been made. Kawhi and Danny are moving on to Toronto, and DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl are coming to San Antonio. You know, we hope that this will be a good situation for everybody involved. Kawhi obviously worked very hard to become the player he is. Our staff worked very hard to help him get there. We wish him all the best as he moves on to Toronto.
So some people are like, oh, the Spurs are going to be worried. No Kawhi Leonard. Worry about the season. Pop says, I'm not worried.
This year will be not much different than other years. We had a lot of additions last year. You know, the year after Timmy retired, we won 61 games, went to the conference finals. The team changed. And, you know, last year under tough circumstances, the 47 wins I thought was an excellent effort on the part of the team. There were a lot of players that hadn't played a whole lot in the past. You know, we'll do it again. We'll have an even more talented crew this year than we had last year.
You know, Dusty and I were talking yesterday that we think DeMar DeRozan could really flourish with the Spurs. I think at the end of the day, I think at the end of next season, DeRozan's going to say, this is the best thing that maybe happened to me. Here's Pop talking about DeMar DeRozan, an all-star. Everybody's all caught up in Kawhi Leonard going to the Raptors. The Spurs did get an all-star in return.
With DeMar coming to San Antonio, I couldn't be happier. I think this trade is going to be good for both teams. DeMar is obviously, you know, a four-time all-star and an all-NBA player. He's been great in the community there, a team player. Somebody that I've respected and watched play for a while now, and we're thrilled to have him here.
Okay, so now here's the next question, and that is, what happens if Kawhi Leonard refuses to play for the Raptors? He says he has no desire. Well, he doesn't say it. We just get the statement.
Yeah.
We don't even know if Kawhi Leonard's alive.
Uncle Dennis has no desire for Kawhi.
We have no idea if Kawhi Leonard's alive on another planet. We have no clue. There is no actual spotting of Kawhi Leonard. So what would happen if Kawhi Leonard and his cronies say, that's it. Nope, sitting out the entire year. We're not going to play for Toronto. That would be a bad move for many, many reasons for Kawhi Leonard. First of all, if he misses all the season or chooses not to report to Toronto, up to his full salary of $20.1 million could easily be forfeited. because if he doesn't show up, he doesn't play, he'll essentially lose his entire salary to fines. The other thing is, this is really interesting, there is another NBA rule that could come into play if Leonard elects to voluntarily sit out next season with the Raptors. Article 11 of the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, states that if Leonard sits out more than 30 days, he could lose his 2019 free agent status. There's a rule in the CBA that if he would do that, he could lose his free agent status. They would basically push it back again.
Yeah.
You think he's going to play for Toronto? I'm saying he's going to.
Yeah.
He can't do that. He wants to go to L.A. next year. He's got to play this year. Now, here's the way he can escape out of it. He can fake being hurt.
Yeah.
But then there is a neutral physician that the Raptors would be allowed to use to examine Leonard. And if they determine that it is made up, they could void his contract. So I would say more than likely that Kawhi Leonard can whine. And, well, once again, don't know if it's him. Him and his cronies, his group of whatever, his people, they can say all they want about he has no desire, he doesn't want to play in Toronto, he's not going to play in Toronto, he's going to sit out the season. The Toronto's going to just sit here and go, well, you have a contract. We took on the contract. You're either going to play and you're going to get paid $20 million or you're not. And the Raptors really have no other way of doing it. I mean, if he doesn't play, the Raptors can't do anything and force him to do it, but they have the leverage in the situation. And the fact that he could give up his free agent status as part of this is a major, huge, that and 20 million reasons why Kawhi Leonard, first of all, he would maybe be more likely to do that had he played a whole year last year.
Yeah.
He played 9 games. He's got to reestablish himself and let people know, I am still a great player. What if that injury that we think isn't that big a deal is a huge injury, it is really bad, and he's never the same player? If so, the Raptors made a horrible trade.
There's a lot of people arguing that they made a horrible trade anyway.
Already. I agree with that. I don't think there's, you know, I will say this. I won't rule out that he wouldn't re-sign in Toronto because people didn't think Paul George would. But Paul George didn't say the things, or his people, like Kawhi has been talking. You know what I'm saying? They didn't go, well, you're going to OKC. Well, he wants to be in L.A., so he doesn't want to play in OKC. They never said that.
No.
So the door was always open for him to re-sign with OKC. Paul George said it all through the season. I'm going to address it at the end of the year. He goes, I like it here. I enjoy it here. And we're going to see where it leads me. And OKC convinced him to come back, and it worked out for OKC to the Lakers' chagrin. Maybe somehow Toronto and Kawhi can work, but there's a lot more stuff out there just in the last 24 hours, a lot more than there ever was with Paul George at OKC, to where you have to sit here and say it's highly doubtful he will play in Toronto more than 1 year, if at all.
Yeah, I've always been of the belief that no matter where Kawhi was this year, you know, they can say that he's going to sit out, but he's not going to sit out without having some legit way to do it. You know, he's not just going to, I just don't feel like he's just going to come in and say, no, I'm not playing. And that's it. I think what you're talking about, there's a chance that, you know, maybe he says that in training, getting ready for the season, he had a setback again.
Right.
And had an injury that won't allow him to play this year. You know, maybe, I don't, you know. And like I said, we don't know that he didn't honestly have a setback and his injury was worse than what they said and worse than what it actually was, you know, diagnosed as, because we've never heard from him. And you've never even heard from his team on that front. They just sat out. They just stayed away from it. They didn't do anything with that other than sitting down, not playing, and being in New York or whatever.
Right.
So, I mean, he could do that. You know, that'd be about the only way. But like you said, you can have another, you know, third-party position come in and say, yeah, he's clear, he can play. But based on what we see, based on what he's doing, this injury's not as bad as he's trying to tell you, he can play. So, I mean, that's about the only way I think Kawhi won't play, is if he can somehow work around that and say he's still hurt and injured, because it doesn't make sense for him at all when you look at all those things you just said. And for me, it was financially anyway, it doesn't make sense. But the biggest thing of all that is you can't expect to get some kind of big max contract deal if you've only played 9 games
in 2 seasons,
in two out of 164 possible regular season games that you could play,
yeah,
you played 9. Nobody's going to give you a 5-year, $140 million contract. I mean, the max that he could get if he went to the Lakers would be like 140.
I won't say nobody. Yeah. All it takes is one.
Well, yeah, but I don't think anybody that's really contending, that's trying to do the right things,
yeah, I agree,
are going to want that kind of player on their team too. And he turns into like a T.O. kind of deal. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not the same way, but it's the same situation. It's like, is this guy worth a headache? Mm-hmm. Do we want to, I mean, he's got talent we've seen in the past, but is he worth a headache right now if he's not going to go play there? And I think L.A. is probably the only place that, from what his people are saying and what's coming from his camp, that if it's Lakers or bust right now, where else? It's kind of interesting to me, like, would he have said, I don't have any desire to play in Boston? I don't have any desire to play in Philly, if those were the destinations that he went to. You know, you don't know, but the way it seems right now is like L.A. or bust for Kawhi, and that's it, which is still weird to me because his personality has never fit something that I would put in Los Angeles.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's a crazy situation, but there's no way that he can think it's a good idea for him to sit out this season and not play in Toronto.
I think that's horrible advice,
yeah,
myself. And I think at the end of the day, not what's,
I mean, he's
going to
play in Toronto, unless Toronto trades him before. You know, there's always that possibility, too, that the Raptors can try to trade for somebody, some other package to get on their team.
Right.
I mean, this could have been a whole, like, hey, Lakers behind the door saying, hey, they're not going to trade him to us.
Right.
Make that trade, and we'll give you some of our guys that the Spurs – right – didn't think was enough.
Mm-hmm.
Can't ever rule that out.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm not saying it's going to happen, obviously. The odds probably aren't great on that, but
I wouldn't think so.
Can't ever rule it out.
All possible. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. Hey, Kawhi, you want to keep being a malcontent? We'll ship you to Canada.
That's what it feels like, though, right?
It does,
like,
doesn't it?
Like this guy was
complaining. We're not just
going to
trade you outside the conference. We're trading you to north. We're out of the country, boy.
Right. Man.
You thought San Diego was really good. How about Toronto, Canada,
yeah,
which I hear is really nice and lovely, honestly.
He was just trying to get traded. He ended up getting deported.
Yeah, I know. I know. Isn't that something? If there was a Mexican team, he probably would have been sent. He would have been sent south, too.
Guaranteed.
Wow. All right, so
there's an NBA team in Mexico City. You can bet he wouldn't be in Toronto right now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Mexico City would be closer to San Antonio.
Definitely.
Okay, there's another trade yesterday, and it was in Major League Baseball. The Dodgers acquiring Manny Machado from the Baltimore Orioles. Now, Machado is a free agent end of the year, so the Dodgers are going to have to, hopefully for them, they can sign him to a long-term deal. Now, when I first saw the trade that the Dodgers give up 5 prospects to Baltimore for Manny Machado, I was like, wow, man, Baltimore must have got a lot. Then you look at the prospects that Baltimore got. They got 1 really good prospect and a whole bunch of maybes, which typically is what you get.
Yeah.
But usually for a guy like Manny Machado, you expect to get 2 high-profile prospects. Baltimore didn't. I think they should have got more for him, but that probably was the best deal on the table. Bill Plaschke, he covers the L.A. Dodgers for the L.A. Times. He's on ESPN from time to time on shows like Around the Horn, and he says, how did the Dodgers do this? He goes, they got Manny Machado, one of the best players in the game, and they got plenty of money to re-sign Machado if he wants to stay in L.A., and all they had to give up was only 1 of those 5 players was a top 10 prospect for the Dodgers. They only gave up 1 of their top 10 prospects in this trade. None of them are major league ready. They didn't have to trade any major league regulars to get Machado. They didn't have to send a starter of any kind, a starting pitcher, relief pitcher. Nobody on their 25-man roster, their 40-man roster, they did not have to send to Baltimore in this trade. So it sounds like a pretty good deal for the Dodgers, and they still got all kinds of flexibility with all those prospects to go get bullpen help, starting pitching help. They are definitely the favorite in the West, and with the National League being really down a little bit this year, the Nationals are down, the Cubs are okay, but they're not dominant. You start to sit here and go, okay, it's the Dodgers. They should be back in the World Series. So here's who is this? Is it the GM?
Forehand Zaita, I think.
Okay, is he the GM?
Yeah, he's GM. Yeah.
Okay, here's him talking about the acquisition of Manny Machado.
We have the kind of depth in our farm system where we can afford to do that. But again, we're in a situation where, you know, we're in first place, but we're in first place by the slimmest margins. And there's four teams in the NL within four games of each other. So, you know, we felt like improving our team in this 2 or 3 week period was imperative. And we think Manny Machado was the best target out there for that.
Well, he's the high profile guy. So he goes to the Dodgers. That means Baltimore will get worse, which means the Royals have a better chance of getting a number one draft pick. Another way the Royals could improve their chance to get number one draft pick could be that they move some of their guys. Jeffrey Flanagan, who covers the Royals on kcroyals.com. Here are the trade pieces the Royals have. And there might be a few that you hadn't thought of. We've talked about Mike Moustakas. That one's the obvious one. And now that Machado has been traded, the dominoes should start to fall in the trade market. And Moustakas, there is interest from the Phillies, the Braves, the Yankees, Cardinals, and Angels. So Moustakas could be a first base or third base option or a DH in the American League. There are some suitors for Mike Moustakas, according to reports. Lucas Duda, who has been he's a left-handed power hitter for the Royals. He can hit the ball out of the ballpark. He's been hurt a little bit this year. He'd be a nice, you know, pinch hitter, fill-in type of guy for a team. Maybe the Royals probably get up maybe some kind of mid-level prospect at best, probably for him. Another guy we haven't really talked about is Jason Hamill, who's now in the bullpen, and has looked pretty good in the bullpen, throwing 94-95. We're all failed starters go to the bullpen, or try to. Jason Hamill, who's been a starter pretty much his whole career, he could be a piece that people would be interested in for strengthening their bullpen. A power arm, 94-95. So that would help the Royals get a little bit of money off the books, because it's the end of Hamill's contract with the Royals, 2-year deal he signed before last season. And the main reason they got him is because Yordan Ventura passed away in that car accident last winter. And had that not happened, Hamill wouldn't even been on the Royals team more than likely. So that's a guy. Wily Peralta, who they just got up on the team about a month or so ago, has done a nice job in relief. He's kind of been their closer. And he has pitched well, and he has a power arm. They might be able to get something for him. And then the two guys that probably would bring the most for the Royals, at least they appear to be the sexiest options, would be Whit Merrifield and Danny Duffy. And the reason why they are very attractive is that Duda, Hamill, Peralta, and Moustakas, I believe all four of those, are free agents at the end of the year. So they would be rental players. Whereas Whit Merrifield is under team control through 2021. Duffy is through, I think, at least 2021, might be 2022. I'd have to look that up. So if you're a team looking to trade, you can get a guy like Whit Merrifield, and you can get him for team control, not a rental player. He can play second, he can play first, he can play center, left, or right. Gives you a lot of flexibility, outstanding speed, good contact hitter. He's a gamer. You got Danny Duffy, who's pitching really well, 2.73 ERA in the last month and a half. And you have team control of him, a power pitcher, and a good starting pitcher when he's on. He's outstanding when he's on, of course. Those two guys are going to probably bring you more in trades than Lucas Duda, Mike Moustakas even, Jason Hamill, or Wily Peralta, because they're under team control. And they're both having good seasons, or at least right now, Duffy's pitching well. So if you're thinking about how do you speed up the rebuild if you're a Kansas City Royals fan, if you really want to speed it up, you hope to get some really good offers for Whit Merrifield and Danny Duffy, so good that you can't refuse. I personally like to see Whit stay with the Royals, but if the Royals got an unbelievable package to help speed up this rebuild, I don't know if Whit's going to be part of the team that makes the playoffs the next time. Say, I'm hoping in 4 years, he'd be 33 then. I don't know if Whit would be a prime player at that time. And his value, it's like a stock. You want to sell high and buy low. Well, Whit Merrifield's stock is as high as it's ever been. So that would, but I still hate to see him leave. I really like him. And then Danny Duffy loves Kansas City, but then gets criticized by Kansas Cityans for walking to a baseball game, which is ridiculous. And so, you know, I think Duffy would really excel in the right situation going somewhere else. If the Royals could get a lot for Danny Duffy, I'm all in on Duffy. Here's why. Duffy has not put together a full, consistent season as a starter.
No.
And he's had arm problems before, Tommy John surgery. He's now starting to throw his curveball again, which puts more pressure on the elbow and the ligaments, which worries me a little bit. And he's a power pitcher. Those guys break down quicker. And the other thing is, you save money on your books if you trade him, even though it's a fairly manageable contract. He signed below market value when he signed with the Royals. I'm cooler with them trading Duffy than I am with Merrifield. Are you in agreement, or what do you think?
No, I'm definitely in agreement on that. We've said the same things about Danny Duffy for how many years now? Like, yeah.
When
and he's still a guy.
He's
still a guy that the other night, last time out, pitched 7 innings, I think, but he had 114 pitches. You know, he's still a guy that goes high in that pitch count, and that's one of the biggest problems.
Not as bad as he once was.
Yeah, but it's still, I mean, the one time he had a 5-inning game with 106 pitches, recently, and it's just like, that's not ever real good.
Well, when he was awesome for that 2-month stretch a couple years ago, he was efficient.
Yeah.
Low pitch counts.
When he had the game where he almost had the no-hitter.
16 strikeouts or whatever it was.
Yeah, and I think
he threw like 100 pitches.
Yeah, because he only had like 88 or something when the no-hitter got broke up, yeah, or something like that in the,
yeah,
seventh. I mean,
mm-hmm,
it wasn't like a extreme thing that we've seen with him. But yeah, that two and a half month stretch, it was everything you wanted Danny Duffy to ever be.
You're like, it finally clicked.
Yeah, and then season was over, and that was it for that part of it, because it went into September a little bit there too when he was having that consistency. But it's just not ever been the same. I mean, you can't count on him to be that number one ace with the way, especially the way he started this year.
He's got number one stuff. He just doesn't put it out there consistently.
Yeah.
Which means you're not a number one.
He doesn't locate like he should sometimes, and it struggles sometimes.
For about a two and a half month stretch a few years ago, he was the best starting pitcher in baseball, arguably.
Oh, yeah.
Now he's probably he's pitching like more of an ace, but he's still not going 8 or 9 innings.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I think Duffy's a more tradable piece for what the Royals are trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't feel like he's going to be a guy that's going to be that next wave that's going to help them to the playoffs or a World Series.
Who do you think is more likely to be a key piece of the team, let's say 4 years from now, for the Royals to contend? Whit Merrifield or Danny Duffy?
I'd say Whit.
I would too, because I think Duffy will break down.
Yeah.
I agree.
Whit's like, you were talking about Whit, what he can do. He's like this year's like poor man's version of Ben Zobrist.
Yeah, he really is.
Like, because he's really playing well, he's hitting well, and he can play all these different positions. He's just not that all-star like Zobrist was, but I mean, some team is going to value him kind of the same way that the Royals valued Ben Zobrist.
We can get a Sean Manaea type. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
That'd be all right. Danny Duffy, it will be on the hill tomorrow when the Royals resume their season. Do they have to? Yes. Royals are 27-68. They'll host the Twins at Kauffman Stadium. Kyle Gibson on the hill for Minnesota. His ERA at 3.42. He's had a good year, just doesn't have run support. Danny Duffy, 4.59 ERA, but like we said, 2.73 here the last 6 to 7 weeks. He's been much better. All right, how would you like more teams in Major League Baseball? What do you think about expansion?
I'm neutral. I'm not going to go crazy if it happens. I don't know that it has to happen. It's not something that I don't think it has to happen either.
One of Rob Manfred's goals as commissioner of Major League Baseball has been to spread the sport beyond its current demographic. For instance, the league under Manfred has taken a more aggressive approach in hosting games internationally. It only makes sense that Manfred hopes to see the league expand to 32 teams during his reign as commissioner. He says, we have a real list of cities that I think are not only interested in having baseball, but are viable in terms of baseball. We think there's places in Mexico we could go over the long haul. There are certainly places in Canada, Vancouver, Montreal, who used to have a team, the Expos, until they moved to Washington and became the Nationals. But there's also a few places in the United States. Have any idea what markets he mentioned? What markets you think would be the next expansion cities in the United States? He mentioned four.
For baseball, the way things are going,
do you think
Vegas is on the list?
Vegas is the first thing I thought, one of them.
Because they were in consideration when the Expos were being put out.
They got the Raiders coming in a couple years. They got the hockey team, the Knights. Now baseball would be the next logical thing.
Yeah.
Okay, there's one. Okay, another. There's
for baseball.
Others. For baseball.
Oklahoma City.
Nope. Expansion cities, not Oklahoma City.
There's probably not a whole lot in the Midwest, I'm going to guess.
No, that was the one I thought there might be.
No, not in the Midwest.
Portland?
Yep, Portland's one.
Because I think they were kind of talking about it in the Expos thing.
Yep, Portland's one. Two others he mentioned.
Carolinas.
Charlotte. Yep, that's good. And there's one more. And this one I probably wouldn't have thought of.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a hockey team. Known for music.
Nashville.
Oh, Nashville. Yeah, yeah.
Nashville. Nashville, Charlotte, Las Vegas, and Portland. Of those four, I would bet you Vegas gets it first.
I couldn't decide between New Orleans and Nashville.
New Orleans, that would be one, too.
But they don't have a hockey team.
Yeah, they don't. New Orleans would be interesting. That's not listed here, though. So they're going to expand. They'll go two teams. I could see them going Vegas and then going, giving somebody in Canada one. And then there's Canada, more representation. And there's 32. And then I could see, you know, 10 years from now, there might be more than 32. Or you have somebody move. Which could happen,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. More than likely, if they expand to 32, it's not going to happen anytime soon because the A's and the Tampa Bay Rays are trying to secure new ballparks, be it in their current markets or elsewhere. So it's one of those situations where baseball is going to, you know, leave those options open so that they can protect these organizations if they do want to move, which makes sense. So Tampa Bay has got not a very good ballpark. I just don't see Tampa Bay being able to build a new park. There's not the people there. People don't attend Tampa Bay Ray games. Even when they were in the World Series, I don't even think they sold out. And that's a whole bunch of retirees that are down there.
Yeah.
That half of them are Yankee fans. So I just don't. I've never thought Tampa Bay. And you know what? They still put a good product on the field every year. Even when you think they're going to stink, like they're saying the Rays were going to tank this year, they're above 500. They somehow exceed expectations. They've got some good kids. They develop really well in the minors, but then they don't have the fan support. I, if anything, I'd say Tampa Bay, they should move to Vegas or Portland.
Yeah.
And not have to expand to 32. But if you went to 32, you would have eight divisions of four. It would be nice and easy to schedule. It would be much easier to schedule for Major League Baseball if you had an even set of 32.
Yeah.
Instead of 30. I mean, I know 30 is an even number, but you have... You have your four divisions in each league, and you just go ahead and there's four teams in each division. So then you have four division winners. Now, if you do this, you could open up and have you still could have your two wild cards.
Yeah.
I mean, it could expand the playoffs too if they added two more teams. My question to you though.
Would.
My question to you though is, if they expand, aren't we just oversaturating the product? I mean, we've got teams now that don't have good third or fourth or fifth starters. You're going to water it down even more.
I don't think you need it.
Like, I don't
that's
think
why
you
I'm
do.
Indifferent
for the
about
quality
it because
of baseball,
it'd be fun to have new teams come in. It always is.
Right.
But at the same time, there's so many things that I mean, even with just adding two teams, it can change the game. Like, it just changes everything about it. And, you know, I don't think it's needed right now. I think your better option for cities that really want a new team is to be that team that's going to be that city that's going to be boom boom right on Tampa Bay, if they don't get a stadium, if those people aren't happy down there. I don't understand how Tampa can field three big professional sports teams. Like, I don't get it. Like, you got to have a lot of money that you're just willing to spend to keep them down there in Tampa. You got a hockey team, football team, and a baseball team, and nobody goes.
The Buccaneers are supported.
Buccaneers,
NFL.
But the other two, like, I don't know what kind of attendance they're getting, but I know baseball's not good at all. Yeah. I mean,
Well, Yankee spring training in St. Pete down in that area, I think, or used to be. So it's like Yankees' backyard.
Yeah, well, and they used to have the Tampa Yankees AAA affiliate or AA, whatever they were.
Right.
And then they spring training, they had their minor league affiliate down there, and, that's probably not been good on them to when they come into the American League and they go right into the East in the same division.
Yeah, I know.
Where most of these guys have been Yankee fans for a long time, and now you're trying to tell me to cheer against the Yankees. And so that probably doesn't help. But yeah, I just feel like the best route to go if Vegas wants a team is to jump on the A's like they jumped on the Raiders.
Right.
You know, if they don't, maybe we just move all the Oakland teams to Las Vegas, you know?
And then the other thing you got to think about is, you know, Miami, there's one too. There's another one in Florida. And Miami, I don't know if that's really baseball town, even though you got Cuba nearby, of course, and we got great Cuban defectors
and
baseball players.
Yeah, and Miami's in a better location, but, you know, their baseball attendance isn't really good.
Right now, the attendance in Major League Baseball, because if you're sitting there thinking expansion, and then you go, well, wait a minute, maybe one of those expansion places could end up being where a team relocates, like you just mentioned. Right now, the two worst attendances, Miami just is tanking on purpose. Miami Marlins, attendance averaging 9,500 people a game. Tampa Bay, 14,700. So a lot more, but still low. Next lowest is Oakland, And they're Oakland and Tampa Bay both want new stadiums, and they got the two of the lowest attendances. That makes you wonder if taxpayers are going to foot the bill. I'm guessing not. But you know what owners do? They hold it, tighten the noose around your neck as a taxpayer and say, well, then you're going to lose some pro team. You know, even the glasses kind of threw that out there back in the day. Pittsburgh has the fourth worst attendance, 18,000. Then the White Sox, Cincinnati. The Royals are 24th in attendance. The Royals have the worst record in baseball, and they're still not even close to having the worst attendance. That just, we know what it's a baseball town, and nobody understood that. Younger people didn't understand that until the Royals got good again, and I told young people over and over, it is a baseball town, it's not a football town. The best attendance, the Dodgers have the best attendance, 46,000 every night, 46.7. Yankees second best. St. Louis always draws, no matter how good they are. That's a baseball town. 42,296. San Francisco fourth, and the Cubs draw 38,005 per ball game. So there's your attendance right now. The Royals, 24th out of 30. Of course, we know that attendance was much higher when they were winning. It's still not that horrible, considering how bad they are, that they're 24th.
Yeah, it's...
The Tampa Bay Rays have a winning record and are drawing almost 6,500 people less per game, and they are much better.
Yeah.
The A's are 55-42, and the Royals are drawing 5,000 more people a game, and the Royals are god-awful, and Oakland is a contender right now. That tells you that Kansas City's a baseball town, or it tells you the other towns are
It does tell you the other towns aren't technically.
But the Oakland A's have been known for a long time, but when they were in Kansas City, went to Oakland, they've had a lot of success and support in Oakland.
Yeah.
Back when they won the World Series '88, and they made it in '89, and you had the Bash Brothers and all that. I mean, the Oakland A's have been good in baseball for a very long time. They've had their ups and downs, certainly the last 10 or 15 years, but they're 28th in attendance. You just sit here. If you're somebody that's trying to fiscally be responsible in the city government of Oakland or Tampa Bay, and they want to build brand new stadiums and they want taxpayer money, don't you have to sit here and say, but people aren't coming?
Yeah.
But then the comeback will be, well, people aren't coming because the ballpark stinks. Is that really the reason they're not coming? You build a Taj Mahal, people are going to come for what? Maybe a year to check it out? Honeymoon period is over. The product on the field stinks. They're not coming. And if it is good, they've proven that they don't come anyway. So, but yet you don't want to lose a professional franchise. That really hurts your city. You're kind of stuck in a tough situation.
Aspect, so,
You're stuck in a
tough
situation.
You're trying to figure out whether the economic boom of having it, even if people aren't going, there's still merchandise and there's all kinds of stuff that still goes into your community, whether people are coming to the game or not.
Right.
Well, that's why we said, you know, it doesn't matter that the Chargers are playing in a 30,000-seat MLS stadium, because it's about bringing the money to Los Angeles and the NFL money to Los Angeles.
Right.
They didn't care if people were going to go to the Rams or Chargers games. They knew how much of an economic impact that was going to make for their product.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, there's all kinds of things that go into it. And, I mean, Miami's a perfect example. I mean, I don't think ever – people don't go to the Heat games when they were winning a lot. You know,
they left early when they were losing NBA Finals.
Yeah, and I mean, if the fan support's not the greatest in Miami, but the thing is, those owners have the money.
Right.
And it's a market that's going to still get you money as a league and a product.
Now, listen, if the owners want to pay all the money to build a new stadium, then the city's going to say sure.
Yeah. Because, well, I mean, look at Miami. They're getting 9,500 in that brand-new stadium that they built not too long ago. You know, it's a state-of-the-art place that they've got that the Marlins are playing in, and 9,500 people a night are going to it.
I've said this over and over and over and over. A huge percentage of sports fans don't go to the sporting event because of the venue. They go because of the product on the field.
Yeah.
So you can build the Taj Mahal, and if your team is horrible, your attendance will suffer. You can have a great team in a old, dilapidated stadium. Your attendance will be better. You have to win first. That's the thing that the KU's getting all caught up in.
People are still going to Fenway Park.
Exactly. You know, KU's got all caught up in the $350 million renovation of football stadium and facilities. And I get it. They got to do that to keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
I do understand that.
That stadium's definitely behind no matter what standard it is.
True. But does $350 million going to make people come to games?
No, it's not.
No. What's going to make them come to games is Mark Mangino comes back and they win 12 games and win an Orange Bowl. That's what's going to get. But, and then you got the momentum of fundraising. To build, that's when they should have been jumping all over updating everything. And Kansas missed the boat then. That was a great time.
Well, and they tried to, but I'm pretty sure the people that donated the money, it kind of went south for them, and some things fell through. to what they were going to do at that time when they were really winning. And, yeah, but I agree with you. I mean, the thing with college sports, you spend that $350 million, you're banking and hoping that kids are going to see those facilities, you're going to get better recruits, and then your product's going to get better, and then thus the fans are going to come in. You're going to get more attendance that way. But it's tough to do at a place like that.
$350 million to recruit. That seems like a high price tag.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what it's about right now. It shouldn't be, but...
I know, but you can spend $350 million, you'd be in the Big 12, and KU, best they can do is, say, 6-6.
Yeah.
Is that money well spent or not? Time will
Most
tell.
Most people are going to argue none of the money that's spent.
True.
Even Bill Snyder, I mean, they talked to him about media days. Like, none of that's...
Some people will argue it would be if that keeps you in a Power 5 conference.
Sure.
We shall see. Time will tell.